Hi, thank you for joining me today. It's Ricky Chavez with Battle Ready. It's the process of reinventing yourself. You know, in every day in everybody's life, there's things that pop up, happen, and you get faced with a lot of challenges. It's not about the challenge itself, it's just how you react to it and how you come back from it. So we get the fortunate opportunity to talk to a lot of guests from all through the United States and their various input on what's happened to them, people they've known in their lives. And that's what we bring to you, so you have some solutions. Today we're having our guest is Jerome Robinson. Jerome is an amazing gentleman. He's got a lot of different hats. He's a director. He holds a director of position in a couple of nonprofits, which we'll talk about later. He spent many years as a collegiate coach, and now he's a consultant for one of the scouting companies here, and we'll talk about that also. Hey, Jerome, welcome to today's show.
How you doing, Ricky?
I'm doing amazing, man. Thanks for asking. So, Jerome, you know, we know each other a little bit. We've talked on and off. And you know, I've always been kind of marveled at your life, where you come. So, Jamaican, raised in Canada. How'd that happen?
I don't know. I think back in the day when people were, trying to make a better life for themselves and trying to leave Jamaica, obviously being a third world country. Canada was an easy route. It was easier than America to get your citizenship or your green card at the time. So my parents had some family members that were already in the Toronto area that had to sponsor them over. So yeah, that's how we ended up, being born in Toronto, raised in Toronto. But I have a lot of siblings that are born and raised in Jamaica. So kind of a mixed, blended family, Jamaican Canadian family.
Okay. And so you moved to Canada. Family's in Canada. You're growing up, and you're growing up in kind of a tough neighborhood. You know, what are your thoughts on that? What talk to me about where you're growing.
You know what, when you're a kid growing up in that kind of environment, you don't necessarily know how bad it is, because as a child, you make do with whatever you have in your surroundings, and you have your friends, and it is what it is. It's fun times, and you don't know that it's bad until you leave. Once you leave the area, then you kind of know, oh, we grew up pretty rough.
Right. You know, I think we were talking earlier today, and I was mentioning it to you. My wife's from inner city Indianapolis, and I joke her all the time, well, I'm just going to take you back home. I mean, then you wouldn't be living in Texas. You're like, I wouldn't have known any different. Right.
Right.
That's kind of the
Absolutely.
thought process. Right. So
Absolutely.
then you played college. Well, let's go back. You high school athlete. You decided to go to college. Where'd you go to college at and play basketball?
Bradley University, Peoria, Illinois.
Peoria, Illinois. So from Canada, Illinois. So now you're learning again. So tell me about your first experience in the Illinois area.
It's culture shock. We used to go up to Chicago a lot, and Toronto is a very diverse city, very multicultural. So, culture shock going into Illinois and Chicago area is very segregated. Everyone
Yes.
kind of stays with their people. And I wasn't used to that, because I'm one of those guys that I'm talking to everybody and anybody. I don't care, what you look
Sure.
like, where you're from. That's just how we were brought up. So that was probably the culture shock. Athletic wise, America's very intense when it comes to sports, and that was something to get used to. How, it's a $1 billion business, and with that comes a lot of pressure and a lot of expectations. And so that took a while to get used to how serious the game was and how serious practice had to be, and the demands that the coaches were asking of you. It wasn't a joke. So it took me a while to get over that hurdle. But yeah, I guess those two areas, basketball or sports wise, and just a cultural landscape, were probably two of the most things that kind of stood out to me when I got to America.
So were there any times during that? So, you know, in today's world, you can experience that even more because you're out talking to these young kids that are making these moves, right? So was there at any time you were like, oh, crap, what did I do? Why am I here? Is it really worth it?
No, I don't think so. I think, you know, my background being Jamaican, you know, seeing that type of poverty, growing up in the area I grew up, but just, I think it made me a chameleon, to be honest with you. I'm able to go into any environment and recruit and coach and speak to people, no matter if you're in rural, inner city, it doesn't matter. I can adapt and I could get the job done.
Okay, so you said something that I want to touch on real fast. So you're the chameleon, yes, but everybody else is not necessarily a chameleon. So how did you handle any push that you got when you were in an environment that was a different, that you had no problem with, but they weren't maybe as receptive to you? Did you ever have any experiences like that?
Not really. I think a lot of it has to do with just being honest and being true. Whenever you have some sort of hurdle or issues, especially with recruiting, you know, because it's very picky when it comes to somebody, especially particular when you're picking a school to go to. You know, a lot of factors play into the decision making of a child or their family. But just being honest and just listening, you got to be a really good listener. And whatever their needs are, you got to kind of figure out what you have that, you know, can adapt to what they need. You know what I mean? Just to make them comfortable.
Well, and you do some real estate now too. So it's kind of the same thing when you do your real estate, right?
Absolutely. I mean, that's another thing. I mean, we go all over, you know, you've been doing it for years. We go all over. No matter what the neighborhood, no matter what the dynamics are, no matter what the environment and the street looks like or the inside looks like at the house. I mean, we have to treat everything professional and treat everybody the same and the same love, the same respect, the same needs, no matter, you know, if we're selling a $100,000 home or a $4 million home.
No, for sure. But I think what I'm catching out of what you're showing, you're sharing is it's all about making the match.
Yeah, you know, absolutely.
Making the match. You listen to them, hear what they want or need, and provide what you have to match that, right?
Absolutely.
Okay, so you played ball, and then you did a little stint in the European League. How long are you over there?
I was over there for probably a little over 8 years. I was in
so what made you go over there
after college? You know, you try out for the NBA, had a few workouts with the Toronto Raptors, things didn't go as planned, didn't get drafted, but you still don't want your career to end. And you know what kids need to understand, and a lot of them know it now, is there's other avenues besides the NBA. You know, you can make a really good living going across the water, whether it be Europe, South America, Australia. There's a lot of options that pay really well. Asia, you know, you can make a really good living. And, you know, I had a couple agents that had some jobs for me over there. And I, you know, nervous at first going, you know, another time, going to a new country, new landscape, language barriers and all that stuff. And you just kind of take a leap of faith and know that, you know, with your faith that it's all going to work out, especially with, you know, your upbringing and your, like you said, you're battle ready, you know, you're built for this stuff. So once you get there, it's your foundation and the grassroots stuff that your parents instilled in you, your environment instilled in you, your friends and family, you're ready for things like that.
So, you know, you said also, you were ready for it, but I would imagine sports-wise you're ready, but now you go into a country where you don't know the language. Was there some fear?
Not a lot of fear. Like I said, growing up in Toronto, it's so diverse. You know, you have your Polish area. You got it's just, you know, your Jamaicans, your Africans, you have the Caribbean community, the European community, the African community, the Central and South American community. So you grew up, you go into the mall and no one's speaking English at times. Indians are very populated in Toronto as well. So no matter, you could go into any store and you're not going to hear English sometimes. You know what I mean? So it's not a shock to go to a different country and not hear English. It's just
okay.
Not.
Well, I'm not really talking about a shock. I mean, just maybe fear of the unknown. And I know you're a big athlete. Maybe fear is not a good word. I probably should use a different word. But apprehension, maybe. You know, it's like, okay, man, how am I going to find a place to live? Or how am I going to get around transportation-wise? Since I'm going there by myself now. You were by yourself back then, right?
Yeah, correct. You know, but you go to an organization and you hope that your agents place you in because there's stories over there that you know hellish stories over there that players go through, but that's why you kind of try to align yourself with good agencies that are going to place you in situations that they've dealt with in the past, good organizations that are going to have people to take care of you. You know, people to guide you and put you in the right places, put you in the right houses and apartments. You got a lot of teammates that are always, most of my teammates are always helpful. You know what I mean? And a lot of them, every one of them speaks English. You know, every teammate spoke English.
Well, we're going to touch on this again when we come back. We're getting ready to go into commercial. Everybody, thank you for joining us right now. We'll be back in a few minutes. Paulo, you there? Hey, everybody, Rick Chavez with Battle Ready. I'm glad you guys have joined us back here with Jerome Robinson. Jerome Robinson has some time in the European League, and now he's back in the United States. He coached some college ball. We talked to him a little about overcoming his objections or overcoming some of his obstacles as he traveled. Now, in our break, we talked a little about, okay, you segued from your college before you went to play for the European League, play for the Canadian team.
Yes.
Okay, and so you played in, I think you said Australia, for the World Games for to be able to qualify for the Olympics, right?
Oh no, Australia was the pre-Olympic tournament. Argentina was qualifying for the World Games. Argentina, yeah.
Okay, and then from there you went to the European League. I think I was talking about, so that's where you got a chance to meet a lot of the different players from across the world, right?
Yeah, you're playing against them. You see them in the hotels. I think the biggest thing was the travel. You know what I mean? Going over there, going over to Australia, going over to Argentina, and seeing the cultural differences. You know, seeing, you know, go to Argentina and it's, the language barrier is different. And I think that helped my European pro career a lot because I got introduced to it at an earlier stage than probably most people do.
Okay. And so what we want to correlate. So, I mean, although you played basketball over there, I mean, that's your job. So that was, you went over there as a professional for a job, right?
Correct.
So it would be not any different than an expat going to Europe for that. And so what advice would you share with somebody about going to another country to work? Because you were in a bunch of different countries. How many different countries did you play?
I lived in, I want to say, what was it? 1, 2, 3, maybe five different countries I've lived in overseas.
And that was playing ball?
That was playing ball. England, Austria, Belgium, France, 4. But six or seven different cities and within those four countries.
Okay. So what advice would you give to somebody that's getting ready to be an expat in another country?
Do your homework. Say do your homework on that city. Just to make the transition a little easier. Just kind of cause some of the basics, like the daily travel, you know, if you're not gonna have a vehicle, what are the travel routes? What are the fun things to do? What are the places to stay away from? What are the positives or negatives that are online about just kind of foreigners into that area? I think just kind of doing your homework will ease some of the unknowns that you may have, or the apprehensions, apprehensiveness that you may have leading into your arrival in a foreign place. But always, align yourself with, obviously, I was given, you're automatically given friends when you're on a basketball team, but I would think the workplace can be very, very similar. You're kind of giving colleagues right away. Just finding somebody to align with and just asking questions. And, when what I did a good job of was when they wanted to go out or they wanted to go and see different, sightseeing the locals, I made it my job to go with them. Some of my teammates or some of the foreign, like the North Americans, they kind of stuck to themselves and they didn't want to go out. They didn't want to go see the world or see the cities. I made it my job to go out and, so that's how you got closer to your team, but you also got to see the world. You never know if you're gonna ever get back to that city or that town ever again. So might as well just kind of take advantage of the opportunity.
Sure. And so, how long is the season?
Everyone's different. Usually arrive end of August, early September, and some can go all the way until like April. Some could go even longer to June.
So, what do you do between that? What do you do? I mean, what were you doing work-wise between the seasons?
You weren't really, I mean, I was playing with the Canadian national team at times, so you're getting paid doing stuff like that. But the average person usually just takes the break, just like a pro basketball player would. They're not finding another job. I guess depending on how much you make over there, you can find other work to do. But if you're making a good living, you're just working on your game. You're probably taking a break, taking probably a couple of weeks, 3 weeks off just to recover from the season, and then you just kind of get back into it, join men's leagues, find your workout guy, your trainer, work on your body, work on your health, spend time with the family. But you have to prepare, when June, July comes around, you got to get back into shape to head back over.
So you did your 8 years over there. How did you realize what was the thing that really made you decide, okay, I'm done. It's time.
It was a few things. I broke my ankle. The recovery time was longer than it was. I've broken it in the past and I kind of bounced back from it a lot quicker than I did the last time I broke it. My daughter was in France with me, with my wife, but we didn't have a real foundation stateside. We didn't have the vehicles, the house, the more I wanted to, we were kind of living with parents, my parents, her parents, whenever I came back, because we didn't need to do it. They were like, don't buy a house. You're overseas for 8 months, 7 months. You're going to be paying on a rent or mortgage for no reason. Just stay with us. So it was time where it was like, okay, we need to start building our life, our line of credit, our, I need a vehicle. I'm getting tired of living over here. As fun as it was, it's time with my daughter. She's going to start going to school soon. Do I want her to go to school in Europe or do I want to go to school back home? There's all these questions. And then we just kind of made it a decision. All right, it's time to hang it up and let's go back home and start a life. Let's go find a house.
Find a job.
Got a job and let's. But what people don't understand is, as good as it sounds when you're playing professional basketball overseas, no one in the workplace cares about that. It doesn't go on your resume of like, experience. It doesn't. I mean, what you learn as a basketball player can translate in the workforce, but on the resume, it's not going to get you in the door of any real job. You know what I mean? So you have to start establishing yourself. And my wife was working, so she was holding it down. She was working remotely, so she was able to work remote even back then. So it was good that we're making two incomes.
So you went, is that the time, is that when you went into collegiate ball?
Yes. Well, yeah, like you said, I wore many hats, Ricky. So I was a basketball agent after I got out of professional coaching, and I did that for 3 years. So I was placing, I had my MBA license, and with your MBA license, you can place guys in Europe. And I had about, I think the most clients I ever had was about 15, and I was placing them in small countries in the European professional market, like Austria, Belgium, Romania, the Netherlands.
A lot of travel?
No, not really. Not at all, man. I mean, yeah, I didn't even have to go over there. You know, everything was done through contract, through computers and phone calls and Skype, you know, doing things like that. So I didn't even have to go over, but obviously they had to, the players.
What about the travel on this side to go meet the people, get to know them?
Yes. Yes, yes. Travel to go find guys that you are interested in. You know what I mean? Talking to coaches that you know and seeing if they have any players that have any interest of going. You know what I mean? Looking at numbers, looking at guys that you know you have a chance of getting, and just staying away from guys that you have no shot at getting because they're probably too good. And they're probably getting hounded by agents that have a lot more clout or experience than you do, and it's kind of going after that second tier level client that, you know, they might not be going to the NBA, they might not be going to Italy or Spain, but they could still go overseas and have fun and make some money and do it for
what they like.
Yeah.
So you did that for a couple of years, and then and that's when you went into college ball?
Yeah, I got an offer to go join Eastern Michigan University under Rob Murphy's staff. First, I was a video guy before I moved up. But he brought me in with open arms. And Rob Murphy was, he was a disciple of Jim Boeheim, Syracuse legend head coach. So learned a lot about the 2-3 zone, because that's all Jim Boeheim ran at Syracuse, was a 2-3 zone for all his career. And, you know, I tell people that I'm from the, you know, the tree and the tutelage of Jim Boeheim, you know, the Jim Boeheim tree. So I know how to run a real good 2-3 zone in practice.
So let me ask you this. So how was that transition?
It was hard. It was hard, actually, man. Because I was an hour away from campus, first of all. So I had to, you know, you had to wake up a lot earlier than you're used to, you know, because Detroit had traffic. You had to get through Detroit and get to Ypsilanti. And just learning that side of the game all over again. As a player in college, you really don't know what goes into a lot of the stuff that the coaching staff does. So learning all of that stuff, I wouldn't say it was difficult, but it was very time consuming. You know, the collegiate sports is a full-time gig, and there's no breaks, even when, you know, it's not a 9-to-5 deal. You know, you carry your work home with you, you carry your phone home with you. It's nonstop recruiting, it's nonstop trying to get players, trying to get wins. You know, as a video coordinator, coach wants all types of film set up. And so you have to learn the software. And when he says he needs this and that, you got to clip these clips up, and then you have to present it to the whole team. And it can't have any hiccups. You know what I mean? It has to be smooth, and it has to. So it was a lot of different learning that you had to do, man. But it was all worth it in the end, because diving into video, you learn the game a lot more, because you're watching a lot of game film. You're watching a ton of game film. You're learning a lot of sets. You're you're stealing plays from other coaches that you really like, and but it helps you learn the game so much faster.
So we're going to talk a little bit about some learning, your learning strategies as you took these new jobs. When we come back, guys, we'll be right back. We're going to go out for commercial. Hey guys, I'm back. It's Ricky Chavez with Battle Ready. I have Jerome Robinson here with me today. Jerome and I have been talking, you know, a lot about his experiences and career in professional basketball when he played for the European leagues, transitioning to becoming a scout and, you know, matching kids with the universities, and then actually going on to become a staff person and coach for collegiate ball. And we were talking about when he was with the video crew. So tell me again, Jerome, you were doing what with Eastern Michigan?
Yeah, so I was a video coordinator, life skills coordinator, and, you know, it was just learning the software. So it's, you know, there was the software called Sports Code. There's another one that we used to use. I'm blocking the name now, but it was a software I wasn't familiar with. And I didn't, and Rob Murphy asked me, you know, can you be the video guy? Can you do this stuff? And I was like, heck yeah, I could do it. I was like, you know, it can't be that hard to learn it. You know what I mean? So long story short, I got in touch with the video guys at the University of Michigan, and they have a whole army of, you know, they got the budget. So they had a lot of video guys on staff. And I went over in the summer. I think I had about maybe a month and a half before I had to start the job. And I would go to University of Michigan and their sports department and learn these two softwares. And these guys would give me all the little tricks and all the how to do things efficient, fast, you know, stay away from these areas. This is the area you focus on. This is, and how to present it to the team. It was very detailed, but once you got the hang of it, so I just carried the software home. I had it on my laptop, on my Mac, and I would just practice and practice and practice and connected to the monitor, connected to the TV, you know, act like I'm doing a mock display for the team and continue to do that. And then by the time everything came around, what Rob did a good job of was he didn't know I was doing all of this. So what do you know, he put a test and said, hey, Rome, I need XY done. I'm gonna show the guys in 10 minutes, get it done. And I remember saying, okay. And I remember this is my first real assignment. And I did it quick. And he was like, oh, you're finished already? I was like, yeah. So he's like, all right, bring the laptop down. We're gonna show the guys. I thought he was gonna show the guys, but then I had to hook it up, show the guys. And what you don't want to do in a group like that, and those, because, you know, they're young and impressionable and they want to crack jokes and stuff. You don't want to mess up. You know what I mean? You don't want to have any, because then the snickering will start and the uh-oh, he's in trouble. You know what I mean? So you have to be on your P's and Q's, and you have to be efficient, and you have to know what you're doing. So that time at Michigan with that staff did wonders for actually the rest of my career coaching, because it's a software that they still use. And I was able to kind of, even though I wasn't a video coordinator at my other stops, I was able to do my own film. I was able to actually take stuff off the video coordinator's hands, because I was like, I'm just gonna cut up my own tape. Don't worry about it. Like, yeah, I know coach is giving you a lot of stuff to do. I'll just cut up my own stuff. I know how to do this stuff. I've been doing it forever. So I'll cut my own clips. I'll show my own stuff. You don't have to do it. Unless I was swamped and I'll be like, hey, can you, you know, but that helped. That time at Eastern Michigan helped my career throughout.
I'm going to step back for a second. All right. So I want some clarification. So you got the job at the position, and then you went to another university to learn. So were you on staff? Were you getting paid for that? Or did you do that on your own? So that, what was that?
Yeah, no, I wasn't on payroll yet. I knew I was getting the job. I'd signed the contracts and all that stuff. So I knew I was the video guy for the following season. Michigan was great. You know, the basketball department was great. I think the coach at the time was Beeline, but they were great. They invited me in. You know, they didn't charge me anything, obviously, and they just had their doors open for me to come in and learn. These guys were video guys, you know, so they're always there. I think their coach had them doing stuff all the time, and they liked it. They were like video guys. So yeah, that's what they did, and they invited me in, and I just learned from them.
Okay, so you're even missing the point I'm trying to make here, and that is they were nice, that's all great, but you took it upon yourself to go and do this, where a lot of people just wait till they get their job and start their job, and who knows what happens. You were determined to make the best showing, which took time from you, your family, to get all the stuff together to be ready to do that work. Am I right?
Yeah, correct. You know, my mom always says you have to go through it to get to it. So those are part of the process of like going through it. And I never want to not be prepared, you know, when the opportunity arises. I never want to be that person that's stuck when that moment hits. You know, I want to flow. I want to you know, make a great example, you know, of for myself, my family, whatever it takes. I knew that this was bigger than the video job. It was bigger than the role that I was about to take. This position, if I do it well, can really set a trajectory of my career forward. And that's what it did, I think.
Okay, so yeah, I think that's cool. You know, in today's world, I mean, everybody's not as proactive, and then they wonder why they fail, right?
Yeah.
And I think in one of my other shows, I was talking to a guy, and you know, the old adage, you know, practice makes perfect, right? You always hear that all the
Yeah.
time, right? But I remember probably, I don't know, 30 years ago or so back, I had a coach tell me, it's not practice that makes perfect, because if you practice a mess, you will be a mess. So
Yeah.
perfect practice makes perfect,
Yeah.
right? So, you know, and today people don't get that adage as much. It's like, I'll figure it out. But if you don't have a basics, what are you going to figure out?
Absolutely.
So now that's really always impressed me. Even anytime we get together and talk over other things, that you feel, I feel like you're very strategic in your speech, you know, about what you're going to say, what you're going to do, and how you prepare, even for some of the things we've done together. So now you did 8 years of coaching. So you were in the videography area. Then you went, tell me about the rest of the time.
Same Bonaventure. I was there for 3 years. Worked for a great coach, Mark Schmidt. He's still coaching. He's to me, he's a genius when it comes to the game and the X's and O's and the plays and offensively. He's the best in the business. And there's a lot of coaches out there. He's one of the best in the business to do it. So I was grateful that I landed at that spot. Because I learned so much from him. You know, it's a small town. St. Bonaventure is a small town in Olean, New York, probably an hour and a half south of Buffalo. You know, small university, but big heart. You know, big heart. Beautiful school, beautiful area surrounded by the kind of the Allegheny area and the mountains. And after I left Bonaventure, we had great seasons at Bonaventure, really good seasons. Won the
What did you
conference.
do there?
I was an assistant coach, so
Okay.
I was my job was to recruit and to get guys better, pretty much. Player development, recruitment, and I also had maybe about eight scouts. Scouts meaning teams that you had a scout. So a typical season would probably be 30 games in a season, and eight of those games were my teams, where I had to watch like 7 to 8 games on that specific team, and then I had to know what offenses they were running, write down the offenses, know what defenses they were running, know what all the sets they would run, and know the personnel. and what the players, the individuals' tendencies were. And then a couple of days before the game, it was my job to take that information and present it to the team, because it was my team. But the other coaches never watched the games. They don't, you know, besides the head coach, the other two assistants hadn't watched the game, so they don't know about this team. It was my job to say, okay, guys, this is what they want to do. This is what they're going to run. And I had to put the guys in their spots and, hey, this is how they're going to run these plays. This is how we – coach usually would be like, this is how we're going to stop it. You know, this is how we're going to spot. I would be the guy to say this is how they're going to run it. And these are what these individuals like to do.
I'm glad you broke that down, because when you were talking about scout teams, until you told me what you were doing, I was thinking that scouting teams to recruit from. So then when you broke it down, that these are teams you're getting ready to play, right?
Ready to play.
Okay.
And just kind of knowing their tendencies, knowing what they like to run out of timeouts. It's very detailed. Some coaches are very, very detailed. So if it's a close game and it's 30 seconds left and they call a timeout, you know, I remember one time coach looked at me and said, Jerome, what do you think they're going to run? And I was like, what? I don't know. Like, and then he knew because he knows the coach over there on the other side, but it wasn't his scout. It's my scout, but he's the boss. He knew. So I made sure that you're never going to get me that on that question again. You're never. So from that
That's
day,
a good point. Forward,
I was like, okay, I need to know what
preparation
timeouts. I didn't know how to do timeouts too, you know, or who should we foul? You know, we need to foul somebody. Who should we foul? What numbers are we fouling? Oh, I have my foul cheat sheet now. We're fouling 15, 14, 24, and 8. They all shoot 50% from the free throw line. So you always have to be, you have to be prepared and ready for those moments, because when your number gets called, I was a deer in headlights.
That's good. So we're going to talk a little bit more about strategies that we can use in everyday life, because it's the strategy you guys use to prepare for the other teams. We'll be right back after this message. Hey guys, welcome back. This is Ricky Chavez with Battle Ready. You know, it's the process of reinventing yourself. You know, for the last couple of segments, we've been talking with Jerome Robinson and his career from playing European ball, playing for the Canadian national team, and the coaching. And in the last segment, he said something that I really want to bring back. Jerome, welcome back.
How you doing, Ricky?
You're doing amazing. So I know you always talked about how prepared you were when you were getting ready for your career and coaching when you were doing the videos, right? And how you spent all that time getting ready for it. And then when you were scouting a team at the next school, your coach asked you, okay, what player they're going to play. And you said you had that deer in the headlight looks. What did that do for you?
You know what? It was great that it happened. At the moment, you're embarrassed, you're scared, you're nervous, because if they come out and they're successful with whatever play they run, and it works, and you lose the game, that's your butt. You know what I mean? It's like, so thank God we ended up winning the game, and my coach kind of knew what play they were going to run, because the coach has been playing against each other for a while. But what it did, it just made me never want to feel that moment ever again. Like, you know, like I told you, I'm a guy that likes to be prepared so I don't get caught in those moments. I don't like that feeling of I'm out of control. I like to be in control. I like to be confident. I like to be ready. So it just made me prepare a little more. And it's like, okay, I'm not just going to worry about what plays they might run out of a timeout. What other questions may coach ask? Okay.
Yes.
Who to foul? Okay. I'm going to have my cheat sheet on who to foul. What plays are they going to run? It may take it a step forward of like, what plays will be successful against them? What do they struggle at? So it started just kind of elaborating on that preparation. And some of it might have been useless information that I had on my scouting report, but I had it nevertheless. If it ever came up, and fouling comes up all the time, who to foul, because games are close. And there's times you just have to, you know, hack a shack, and who's going to be their shack that we have to foul to get, you know? So those were things that you just have to be ready for.
And this, you know, this conversation is honestly really in line with preparing for a job interview. If you think about it, I remember being in human resources way back when, and a person would come to a job interview and you'd ask them a question and they would give you the deer in the headlights. So, I mean, what a better way is the way you said, what be prepared for whatever question could possibly come your way. And yeah, more information is definitely better than less, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
I can remember asking a guy, you know, I was with a FedEx at the time. Hey, so what do you think we do here? I know, do you deliver mail? I'm like, no. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's so they were not ready. So that's a good point. So let's talk a little bit about the recruiting part of your world, right? And even you do that now, you're a consultant for some pretty cool people now. But when you're out recruiting players, you know, it's kind of not just basketball, although basketball is the biggest part of it, but it's kind of a whole person concept. Look, can you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, I mean, the person has to fit, right? It has to fit your coach, your boss's style of play and your boss's personality. So a kid may, you might walk into a gym and a kid has 30, averaging 30 points a game. It's not always about the points. He's like, does he fit our style of play? Whatever that style may be. Does he fit our team? And then you start the process of like, okay, he looks like he fits our style of play. But it's so much that goes into recruiting. It's like, okay, because there's so many people connected to these kids. It's not just the parents. Back in the day, it would probably just be, you know, you talk to the parents, you talk to the kid. Now it's you're talking to the parents, you're talking to the kid, you're talking to the high school coach, and you're talking to the AAU coach, and whoever else is kind of connected to that. You're touching all these points to make sure you're covering your bases, because you never know who has the most influence on that child. Sometimes it's not always the parent. Sometimes it's their high school coach that they just bonded with, that he believes everything the high school coach or the AAU coach or whatever it may be. So you're touching all these points and figuring out like what the kid wants out of a school. What area does he want to live in? Does our area that we're in even on that radar of the kid? If it is, then it's like, you know, what can we do to, what do we need to do besides building that relationship that's organic to get this kid to like us? You know what I mean? So it's a lot of finding out who he is, what he's into, what style of play he likes to play, what kind of people he likes to play with. What is he trying to accomplish out of basketball? What are your end goals? It may not even be to be a pro. He may just want a certain type of degree, but he's just talented at basketball. Do we have that degree at our school that, you know, do we have something like it, you know, that it can transition to? And then that starts the process of just being organic. You have to touch him. You have to make sure you're doing your touches. You know, real estate talks about the touches. Basketball recruiting is very similar. If you're not touching, then they think you forgot about them. You're not interested, because other coaches are touching that kid, making their phone calls, making their text messages, talking to their parents. And if you're not doing that type of stuff, you'll get behind the eight ball on that kid. So you have to show them love, you know, whether through text message, whether through phone calls, whether it's through their people, just showing that you're interested. So when time comes to make that decision of coming to visit, you're one of the guys or one of the schools that he wants to come and see, because he's developed a natural organic liking to you or your coaching staff and your university, you know?
What about the values of the kid? I mean, what about, okay, I love the way that you're boxing it for your recruiting things, but I mean, what would you tell a young kid or an eighth, ninth grader whose parents are listening to them, what should they be doing right now to prepare for that? I mean, not only just the basketball and how well it is, but what about how they do in school or other things?
Yeah, a lot, all those factors play into it, right? So on the other side, on the flip side to your question, you have to be taking care of your classes. You got to be a student, you know, you got to be a student before the athlete academically, because if your grades ain't up to par, we can't take you. You know, if you don't have a certain GPA, there's nothing we could do. You could be the best player in the world. You're just going to have to find a different route, and college isn't it. You got to make sure that you know there's eyes on you at all times, especially when you're in the gym. So are you cursing a lot? Are you a jerk when you get subbed out of the game? Are you not high-fiving your teammates because you're in your own feelings and it's about me, woe is me? Or when your teammates fall on the ground, are you rushing over to pick him up? Are you cursing at the refs? Are you, you know, talking back to your game? We're watching all of that. We're watching everything you could think of, because that's your personality. And whatever you do there, you're going to bring to our program. And do we want to coach that? Do we want to coach a kid that's talking back? Do we want to coach a kid that his teammate just hit a three and you're not clapping? You know, even in college, there's times where we'll be in film session in Division I and we'll point out our player. Like, are you too good to stand up? The whole team is standing up clapping for your teammate and you're sitting down with your arms crossed. Are you not happy that your teammate just hit a three? So it still happens. They still fall through the cracks. But you got to know that they're watching all of that stuff. They're watching other things that don't have to do with putting the ball in the hole or rebounding at a great rate or passing the ball really well. It's all the other things that make up who you are. They're even watching parents. How are you acting in the bleachers? Are you carrying on like a mad person? Are you cussing the refs? Are you cussing your kid? Because you're going to bring that same energy to my arena and our gym. And do we want that? As good as your kid is, I don't know if we want to deal with you as a parent.
You know what? Honestly, you just enlightened me a lot about all the extra stuff, the high fives, you know, the rushing to each other. And you know, to me, it's kind of second, but I never would have thought of that as somebody's watching that from us before they bring them in. Man, you know, this has been an amazing hour spent with you today, Jerome. You've enlightened me on a lot of things. How can somebody get a hold of you if they're looking for some guidance in the coaching or the sports arena in basketball?
You can email me lyanince@gmail.com, or number is 248-863-7631.
And I really feel bad we didn't talk a little bit about where you're a director of your nonprofits, because you do a lot in the nonprofit. We're certainly running out of time. Hey, it's been a pleasure meeting you and talking to you again. And everybody else, thank you for joining us at Battle Ready. Mr. Jerome Robinson. Talk to you soon.
Thank you, Ricky.
This has been a Now Media Networks feature presentation. All rights reserved.